Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Rick Wright and Jim Ellis. You are listening to With All Due Respect. It is Friday afternoon, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the East Coast, 1 Pacific Time. And without further ado, let's bring in my co-host, Jim Ellis. Jimmy, how are you?
Doing great. How you doing there, Ricky?
I'm doing good. Just got back from having went to get some coffee with my lovely wife. We went to a place we love called Wawa and got some coffee.
How was Thanksgiving for you and the fam?
Thanksgiving was cool. We had a great time. It's small. It's only six of us. It's my sister hosts, and you know we got food for 20, but it's good. And you know my family we get along really well. We connect really well. My wife gets along really well with my parents. My parents love my wife. I get along with my brother-in-law. Everything's really cool. How about you? How was your Thanksgiving?
It was pretty low-key. My wife and I, we stayed in San Diego. Normally, I go up to Orange County, see my dad and my family. And this year, we just decided to stay home. You know, had some mock turkey and some gluten-free stuffing, and it was all healthy. And just watched some TV. It was really low-key. It was good, though.
Okay.
But, So, what's going on in the news? What do you see? Of course, you know, I guess you only see what we see, like social media or the TV. Or I guess if you step outside, you see what's going on, too, sometimes. But anything big going on?
Yeah, do you know what? Since our show about the news, like, what's the truth? Like, finding the truth or getting to the truth, whatever the name of the show was. I don't really know where to go anymore. So I haven't, and I'm trying my best to not support any news outlets that are just, just full of shit and have no integrity. So, it's been sort of tough. I've been on Facebook, I'm on Facebook looking at stuff, but it's been great too, because the news feed is actually, I guess people, because of the holiday season, sort of cleaned it up a little bit. A lot of what I see is this this pipeline,
yep.
And a lot of protests and stuff like that. I'm not really sure what's going on there. Like, they don't really, all they say, people are getting sprayed with cannons, arms are getting blown off, and it's sub freezing temperatures, and no one's going to have drinking water. And I got, and again, I'm sort of skeptical. Like, I don't know what's going on. I saw the governor or something talk about it, and he's like, we got all the permits, we did everything we had to do, and construction went through, and then people started getting pissed off, so now they want to stop it, and it's a little too late. And again, I'm paraphrasing, and who knows, I can maybe get some interesting comments on my news feed or my Facebook page because of what I just said. Mrs. Brady died today, Florence Henderson.
That was on the news, too, yeah. That's out there, and people are responding to that. Because that's like, it's almost like comfort, like this comfort thing, Oh, yeah, the Brady Bunch from the 70s when we were kids, It's like this comfort thing, especially compared to all the craziness that's going on with the campaign, the election, the pipeline, all this other stuff. It's like, oh, yeah, something nice in the world,
I watched a lot of that show. Did you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was the Brady Bunch, Partridge Family. And then the big thing was, as kids, they had the cartoon shows. There was the Osmond Show and then the Jackson 5. They both had shows. That was, like, a big deal.
Yes.
But I wrote something yesterday about, I had this interesting experience about Thanksgiving. Talking about moms and things like that. So we weren't going to go up north to see my dad, and a lot of times my sister will make a pumpkin pie, and, now that I'm a vegetarian, like pumpkin pie, I could still do that, and that was like this comfort food. So I'm looking for pumpkin pie down here in San Diego, and since it's Thanksgiving Day, all the pumpkin pies are sold out. So I went to Trader Joe's, and then I went over to Albertson's. So I'll find something there. And I just kept looking, and there's like mince pie, and then there's a sweet potato pie that looks like pumpkin pie, but it's not pumpkin pie. I'm getting upset. And it's like, I know, yeah. I'm not getting upset just because of pie. And then I started feeling this sadness. And then I said, what am I sad about? It's like, oh, I don't miss the pumpkin pie. I miss my mom. You know, I miss my mom. Yeah. That's what it was. Like, you know, she passed away 4 years ago. And you don't always feel that, you know, day to day. But every once in a while, you know, when you're looking for something and you have a memory, and then, yeah, there it is. So it was an interesting experience to get in touch with that.
Yeah. I think I checked that out on your page, what you wrote. But here's so what was the takeaway, man, from the pumpkin pies? What's the lesson for next year?
Well, I think it's just recognizing the well, one level is pie, one level is love. So the lesson around the pie is to, I guess they're related. The lesson is like, oh, you know, be proactive, you know, do something earlier on, maybe work with my wife to maybe make a pie, I don't know. But with my mom, it's like just recognize that there's a sense of loss, and below that is that longing, and then below that is that connection, you know, that love that will never go away. So it's all good. And the other good news is on Facebook, people were responding, hey, Jim, I got some pie. I can get you some pie. It was pretty cool. But
that's funny.
Anyway, so the other thing, a lot of things going on in the news, and you'll see it on social media, and this is one reason I want to invite in our guest, is a lot of the talk about racism, race tension, things like that are on social media. And it's a hot topic. I'm actually a little anxiety about talking about it because of how charged it is, that, you know, one little slip up of a word, even though I'm like, you know, very inclusive and, you know, wrap my arms around everybody possible. You know, I could slip up, say something like, oh, look, Jim's a racist. I am. So,
yeah.
I don't know. It's a little tricky topic, wouldn't you say?
I agree with you. Yeah, it's just so I'm actually looking forward to this show. I think I emailed you earlier today about my shift in it. I want to become educated in it. I don't want to just be aware. I also want to be aware of it, but I also want to get educated on it. I want to find out, you know, why it's such a heavy word, but nowadays it's so out there. It's like almost like it's like the C word, you know. It's like no one ever says, or you know, you never hear the C word, right? You never heard anybody being called racist, or you know. Now it's like, you know, I can probably scroll through my newsfeed right now and just like, you know, and see the word racism like literally within a couple finger flicks. So I'm really interested to talk to Leroy and just get his perspective on it, and hopefully get some. I have a couple questions for him. And at the end of the show, like, I just hope that I'm more educated, I'm more enlightened on it, and then the rest of our listeners, you know, and anybody who listens to our show will walk away with a better understanding and more education and wisdom on what it is, and you know, how, what is this, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, okay, what would be the common denominator at the end of it would be like, okay, so what's the solution, and how do we start making steps to do it, because it's been around way too long, and you know, and maybe the solution is, or the answer is, there'll always be, but I don't know. But I'm willing to look at it, take a deeper cut at it, and figure out what we can do.
Yeah. Yeah, so my friend Leroy Barrett, I met him a number of years ago, 2008, 2007, something like that. We did, we co-worked on a play/musical called Pop's Diner. And connected with him. There was some, it didn't go so well because of some of the other players, you know, not Leroy, but some of the other players that were in the production. But Leroy was always true blue, man. He was a solid character, person that I would want in my life for sure, just because of, you know, I don't know, just as how solid he is. He's very eloquent. He's a great speaker. And I'll just do a little bio before we bring him on. Mr. Barrett was born in Detroit, Michigan, and he's a born entertainer and continues to find what is to contribute to lives throughout being on the stage. He acts and directs, but is most fond of writing. His mission in life is to profoundly affect lives with the gifts he's been given. He lives in San Diego, though he has a steady trip up to Hollywood, often in efforts to bring his vision to life. Let's go ahead and welcome Mr. Leroy to the show. How you doing, Leroy?
Hey, gentlemen. How y'all doing? Y'all all right?
Doing good.
Yeah, doing well, good. Leroy. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Hope I live up to that very great introduction. I don't know how eloquent I can be, but I appreciate the love. I truly good to talk
even
to you.
Even when things were going astray with the show, and you had some word for it when you were getting upset. Yeah, I'm getting. I don't know. You had a certain word for it. Even when you were upset, you were able to eloquently say why. It was good stuff. So
That's an interesting point, and it matters. That's why I wanted to take a second on that. My father was an amazing mentor. He's more than a father. He's a mentor. That dude he schooled me hands-on. And in the time I was a child, I was a really, really emotional child, a crazy emotional child. My emotions were everywhere. I'm a performer. So, everything's about how I feel. And he was always trying to take that out. Leroy, you got to take the emotion out of the son. You got to take the emotion out of the son. And he explained to me that at your calmest point, your brain works its best. Whether you are directly making sure it functions well or not, when you're panicked and when you're excited, you're excitable, it don't work out as well. But at your calmest point, your brain is working at its optimum, and you can do your best work. So this is what he laid on me. I was 7, 8 years old. And of course, I was looking at him dude, who are you talking to? But sooner or later, though, it sunk in. And I tried to. Whenever it is that I'm offset or ill-set, I try to go to my strongest point of inner peace so that I can communicate my ideas effectively, because that's what matters. It's that I'm effective, not just that I'm blowing off some steam or giving you what for. I want to get to the point I'm trying to get to and achieve something. So I try to retreat to that place so I can think at my
office.
Yeah. That's great.
I've seen you on Facebook a lot. Talk about emotional places where people are just really emotional and words are flying, feelings are flying, and I see you there trying to just look at this point here. And what we want to cover today in our very short time that we have is the topic of racism. I mean, it's a hot topic, especially now after the election and all the things that are in the news. Can we just dive in and because what I see is racism is not just identifying differences in cultures, but actually using it against somebody another. I mean,
right.
I know you've been involved in different things online, different conversations. How do you see racism as it shows up?
Well, that's a really, 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 really big question.
I know.
there are several different trains of thought for me in receiving it in its broad spectrum, right? The first is America's a lot uglier than we've ever truly accepted. So we've got a lot of general undertones that have become explosive items just because it's been okay to talk about them. And it's kind of like you got that teenage daughter of yours that you keep under wraps really tight. You don't let her do anything ever. You don't let her go anywhere. You don't talk to people. You don't let her hang out. And then when she gets to college, she loses her damn mind, right? That's kind of what the nation's like, right? The nation's been in a state of suppression for a really long time. It's been a white-dominated place, so the conversations have been controlled. I mean, and it's not just locally, not just across the nation, but it's international. The dialogue has always been controlled one particular way. So now that there's the speech, the conversation is out there, sometimes people will go overboard, and that's counterproductive. If you call everything racism, then you're sooner or later your speech in its entirety is going to be completely ignored. I'm tired of hearing you say everything I say is racist. It's actually frustrating to hear time. But by the same token, there are some incredibly racist things that are standard American stuff that it's been like that so long that it seems like everybody thinks everything is racist because we've been okay with it for a while. That's been the socialization process for a really long time. So it's a lot of things to deal with, and I think the overburdensome of people throwing out their card that everything's racist waters it down to the point that it can't be effective. And, you know, delivering something racist doesn't help anyway. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you. And I think we agree on that, because I think you heard what I was saying earlier. The question I have is, I don't want to glaze over it, is what are some of those standards right now that are like that are racist, that are sort of like they're just like you said that there's a standard right now that like there's a suppression and racism. Could you give us a couple examples of that, so I can understand better?
Absolutely will. The worst of them are the subliminal messages that we don't even understand. And the amazing thing is the causes don't understand their causes. And so since I'm a performer, let's talk about those in particular. Right? Let's talk about media. Take films like Dances with Wolves or Last Samurai, right? There's a white guy shows up in a culture he knows nothing about. They've been living their culture forever. He's hanging out for a couple months, but before it's all over with, he knows everything they know, and he's the best at it. That kind of programming is some of the worst of its sort, because if you're not cognizant, if you're not watching what you're looking at, you just accept that the white guy is everything. It doesn't matter whose culture he walks into. The same thing with most recently, the movie Avatar. It's a fictional work that this is still a white guy. He's crippled, and he goes into these people's thing, and he can do everything that they can do better than them and live in their culture their whole lives, right? These things paint pictures that, of course, the white male, and it's just a white male. The white male is dominant in everything. He's great at everything. He's every superhero you ever see. He's every military hero you ever want to see. He's everything that's awesome. And conversely, in Hollywood, as it still has not entirely integrated, you see a lot of stuff where the black guy is some drug dealer. I mean, there's always these particular stereotypes and social positions you'll see the black guy in, which is also fed by a very heavy dose of real-life media. So you get this picture, you get this portrait of understanding. And these things are at the core of the problem, along with what happened, how the country came to be. That's at the core of the problem, is even in the passive everyday life, you're still getting fed things that slant to your perspective, that jade you in your understanding.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you.
I remember when I was a kid, we're talking about almost myth building, you know, myths that are created around storytelling. And I remember as a kid, during Thanksgiving, there was the story that they told, the pilgrims sat together with the Indians and all was perfect and all was well. And here I am, like 6 years old, and I'm going, I don't know. I don't know if that's totally the truth. So for me, I actually had that thought as a kid. And then you learn later, like, you know, there's obviously a lot of just violence and leverage killings and different things that happened in our true history. And I think, like, you know, I'm not going to speak for Rick, but, you know, for me, like, it's just a drive for the truth. Like, what is really going on beyond the stories? Just want to know the truth. And if you get down to it, you know, man to man, or just like when you really get down to the deepest part, is just a desire for connection, you know, beyond all the differences. But we have all these stories that are told, like the Indian story and the movies you're talking about, and everything, you know, gets kind of skewed.
Right. So, yeah. And I just want to say thank you, man, because like I don't, like, again, because I am a white male, I don't even think that. I'm like, oh, yeah, there's the white guy, you know, an avatar, you know, he just, you know, coming in there and he's figuring out how to save the tree and, you know, how to save everybody. I'm just like, I don't even see it. Right. You know, so again, like, I don't know if there's something or somebody or people or a group that don't want us to have this conversation. I believe, you know, Jim and I are involved in a organization called Mentor, Discover, Inspire. In that organization, we can have discussions, and I've been in for 13 years, and there's been, you know, there's men that said that you can have any race, creed, color, whatever, and you can work things out by having a conversation and get in a relationship with somebody and actually get to know them. So, the conversation we're having now, like that conversation, like why don't people know that conversation? If people just know that little conversation, that little 2 minute, you know, conversation you just gave us, right? They would have, I have a better understanding of how you feel right now. So, So there's twofold. So thank you for that conversation. Thank you for, now I have a better understanding of that. And now, is there somebody who's stopping that conversation, or why aren't we having those types of conversations?
I think there's a multitude of reasons for that as well. A lot of it's a matter of platform, right? Who's going to host that conversation? The people, because we're so run by money. That means that everybody's got an agenda. They've got ulterior motives, which all lead back to dollars. The conversation we're having isn't bankable. There isn't a way to make money off of the truth and about what people are facing in real life unless you spend the garbage of it and then sell the parts of that, and that's what we have is real. So that's part of the problem is we've monetized life, and so it's really hard to get those hard to reach these kind of topics. And it would have to be, with that in mind, it would have to be somebody who put together their organization for that specific cause. In that case, they're only going to preach to the choir. You know, it's going to be hard to get that out to the masses because, again, we're a monetized society. So if there's not money in it, it's hard to put some weight behind it and actually get that word out there and have that conversation. Yeah, so there's a multitude of things that are kind of holding that up, along with the necessary suppression to keep the status quo, right? And for the most part, you've had groups of numerous different sorts, specifically the Black Lives Matter movement. It was vilified the minute it hit the set. The only thing it stands for is, hey, cops, stop killing us. That's all it is. But immediately it was called a terrorist group. They hadn't terrorized anybody. They didn't think anybody. And every black act that happens, they attribute it to the Black Lives Matter movement because that's what media is. They want to take the voice from that movement. So they demonize it so the people who need to hear their word won't listen, right? And every black person will tell you, there's not a person in the Black Lives Matter movement that's going out to do some damage to somebody. There might be people who have been seen with them who went and did something. That's entirely different than people who are part of a movement, who are organizing to bring that cause to life. But when the media sends it like
and
that.
And again, because the media wants to sell car insurance and beer and whatever's going to be sensationalized. So I get what you're saying. So they're creating something bigger than, or putting a spin on it so that people tune in. And that's disgusting. That's affecting people's lives and causes, and it's not only Black Lives Matter. There's a lot of other ones that, you know, that right away just boom to get this label, and then the mainstream media just runs with it.
Absolutely.
So again, thank you for that.
Well, the one thing I wanted to add is that also creates a targeting, particularly for the black community, as well as many others. When you have a champion who actually gets the word out to energize the masses, he winds up missing somehow. He or she winds up missing somehow. So there's been a successful effort to silence the people in general. I mean, for our community particularly, every hero we could point at did not die of natural causes. So it's kind of hard to get someone to stand up to the mic when you understand that's pretty much what you're facing when you start out.
Right. So Leroy, I was hoping to just bring it home a little personal here. Would you be willing to talk about maybe your upbringing in Detroit? Or I know that's been some hotbed of unrest in the past, different times, or some place where you really started to have your first experience of what we would call racism. or anything like that.
Oh, okay. Well, it would have to be a stark contrast to where I grew up, because Detroit was, as of USA Today in 1986, it was a 86% black city, and I felt every bit of that. I mean, everywhere you went, it was black. It was black doctors, black attorneys, black teachers, black bus drivers, black everything everywhere. Every other ethnic group was an echo, and it was not a racist place. Now, I say that as the majority, but I had my eyes open because my father was who was. So, and we just lived. People were just people, and nobody really cared. But when I went to college in Knoxville, Tennessee, that was when my eyes were open. I went to a black college, HBCU, called Knoxville College in Tennessee, the third black college in America. And there, the energy of the black people together was different, which is kind of what I expected. But it wasn't until I got off campus and went out in town and had women clutch their purses when I went in the elevator, and I had a woman, an older white woman, almost hit me with her car in a parking lot of Kroger's, and her immediate response was to lock her doors, right? Those things might be small to somebody else, but, I mean, just imagine that feeling. You have no... There's no malice in your heart or any inclination of anything that she had going on that made her lock her door in your life, in your person, in your mind. But you know why she locked her door, right? And it didn't make any sense to me. It hurts to the day. That's why I said it. It might have been a small thing to somebody else, but I'm loved, Jim. You know me. I'm loved.
Oh, yeah.
But that's my whole focus. That's what life is. That's why we're here. We're here for the benefit of other people. And I couldn't understand for the life of me why you would lock your door at me like I'm some threat when you almost hit me. You didn't say sorry. You locked your door. And so that was awakening that, oh, wow, the stuff I watch on TV or some of the things you're telling me about, they're really real. And, you know, I went through quite a number of things there in Tennessee because it's Tennessee. But that's where that light really cut on. Now, the flip side, and I'll say it really quick, the flip side is the school systems. I wound up being a substitute teacher there really early, and I shouldn't have been because I didn't have certs or nothing. It's kind of the going rate there, which is what it was. It was really sad. And I got to meet some of the kids in elementary, middle school, and high school, and I met kids without aspirations. I met kids in the eighth grade that couldn't read and write, and I saw how the system was systematically failing these children, and it hurt me and rocked me to my core, and it changed what my responsibility was. One part was who you are as a black man in America, how you need to adjust to that, because even being beautiful and loving and kind won't always open that door for you or make that human connection for you. But it's also that because there are people who aren't as advantaged as I was and having the father I had, I'm going to need to do more than just look out for me and myself and my concerns.
So it's amazing. I mean, we could go on so long, and I wish we could. We only got 2 minutes left, and I want to just cover a couple of things. One is, anything else that we're not seeing that you're seeing and experiencing that would be educational for us? And the second part is, any passive solution, any type of way of responding that you believe would be towards love?
The list of things that I deal with that you don't see, I'm sure are long, and that's, I don't say that to be arrogant or foul in any kind of way. It's just, it is an experience. It is different, and, you know, I've got enough partners of whatever sort because I'm a Marine, too, and, you know, I got brothers of every walk of life, and, you know, I am able from time to time to take peeks into what worlds are. As it were. So I know things are a little bit different. But more importantly, the most important thing is resolution, right? And the resolution is also a very multitudinous topic. And there are several sides. The first side is for black people in particular, it's the only group of people I can truly talk on, is we have to have an ownership. We have to create a village again. When I grew up in Detroit, that's what it was. You know, everybody's mama was your mama, and you didn't, you know, as a kid, you didn't yell curse words down the street because you're not disrespecting your neighbors, because they'd probably kick your butt, but they certainly take it to your mama. She won't kick your butt. We were a village. And now America is a me, me, me kind of place. So, you know, we don't have that kind of closeness or togetherness or love and trust in our neighborhoods, our communities, in our families. And that's where the strength of any people is. It's in that family unit and the extension of that family unit. And that's where we'll need to go because, unlike many of the other ethnic groups, racial groups, they have togetherness. They have a bond. They have a strength, mostly in their culture. And, you know, we have challenges there because it was taken from us. But they've got culture. The Mexicans in particular, their family, all of them, every Mexican has some love for a Mexican. There's some affection for another Mexican. They share Spanish. They share their music. They share their food. They're a one in those ways, and that's understood by everybody else, even though they don't stand up and say it because they don't have to, right? So those are lessons we can learn in strengthening us and our people. And the other part is the opposite side is a matter of patience, right? I'm not the dude that's going to try and find every word you say and find a racist thing in it because that's asinine, right? There are people who do that, and, you know, you have to take some of that with a grain of salt. But just deal with things with love and understanding as you approach them. We don't know everything. We don't know anything about anybody else's walk in life. It doesn't matter what your race or creed or color is, but we don't know you. So, you know, approach it with some patience and some love and do what you can to work it out as a decent person. That's the best you could do.
Right on. Right on. Well, thank you, Leroy. Again, you know, we could go on so much longer, and I wish we could, but we're right here out of time. Anything else, Rick, you wanted to share about this topic or with Leroy? I mean, I just really appreciate you, Leroy, being on the show. I really appreciate it.
No problem.
Yeah, I just want to say thanks. You know, I just want to I appreciate what you brought today and what you just, you know, what you gave me, just like I said earlier in our conversation. And, you know, it's my hope that, you know, conversations like this continue to happen everywhere and we inspire people to have these conversations because, again, knowledge is wisdom. And I know with knowledge and wisdom, there'll be a better understanding. With better understanding, there'll be some healing and also some brotherhood and some connection and hopefully less hate in this world.
Right, and some empowerment through all of that we are better and stronger because of it all. Yeah, I'm with you in that entire. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jonathan, for having me.
Yeah, thank you, Leroy. So we're thanking Leroy there. And then so, Rick, for everyone else to know, to get a hold of us, we are at Freedom – what am I saying? That's the other show. With all due respect, if you go to Facebook, you type in "with all dude respect," you can get a hold of us. And if you want to get a hold of Leroy, you can go through us as well. I mean, I just think if everyone has a conversation, if we all get understanding, like you're saying, unity is possible. I think it's what we all want deep down. And all this surface shit, you know, we can heal. So,
absolutely.
Thank you, Rick.
Jimmy, thank you. And I'm sure we will speak before our next show next Friday, same time, same place.
Right on. All right. Thank you all for joining us. We will talk to you again. Peace.
Take care, everybody.